Hi, this is Alina and Megan, and you're listening to Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, where we dive into all things health, wellness, and fitness.
We are two certified athletic trainers, personal trainers, and nutrition coaches who met and graduated together from the University of Arkansas. And we want to do this podcast to spread our joy about treating our bodies well through nutrition, exercise, and knowledge.
On today's episode of Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, we have Monica Frank. She is based out of the UK. She's an osteopath, a counselor, and a movement specialist. She has written two books that we talked a lot about on this upcoming episode. One is called Body Sense Book and Journal, and the other one is Body Sense for Fitness and Health Professionals. They are designed specifically for fit pros and clients to use as they build towards the path of change. She's actually offering a course, which I think was just released last week, and all of this information is in the show notes of this episode. The course is helping people figure out their personal needs with their clients, figuring out a personal manifesto, professional ethics, and using the power of your own story. She has this course set up with 10 different presentations every week, and seems like it's going to be a fantastic course for you guys to check out. So this episode, we covered everything from her interesting background moving all over different places in different countries and how that's attributed to what she is doing right now in her life and why she really wanted to study the psychology of motivation and the psychology of why humans do what we do. So hope you like this episode. Subscribe and give us a like. We have more episodes coming out for you in the near future. So thanks so much for listening. Okay, so today on Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, we are so excited. We have Monica Frank all the way from the UK. And we were just talking a little bit about your background. So we're definitely going to talk a bit about that. But I just want to introduce you a bit. You're a counselor, right? Movement specialist, and you're an osteopath. Yes. So why don't you tell us a little bit about like what has brought you to kind of be doing what you're doing and a little bit about who you are to start?
Sure. Okay, well, I will start with who I am, I guess, first.
Yeah.
So, I was born in Zimbabwe.
So interesting.
In way back in 1974. And we left in 81, which is round about when Rhodesia became Zimbabwe. So it was at the time of independence, Mugabe came in. And so we left then and moved to Canada. And we were in Canada for about a year. My dad was a pharmacist, and they had told him before we left Rhodesia that he would be able to get work without a visa. And then it turned out that that wasn't the case, and they asked him to retrain. Now, this is a man of 40 years old. He's just moved country. He's got four children in tow. Wow. I was the youngest, and my siblings are like 8, 10, and 13 years older than me. So we actually ended up being taken out of school to pick cherries for 6 months and then pretty much left the country. And then we lived in Scotland, and then we lived around South Africa, and then we were back in Scotland. So like ultimately I was in like 6 different primary schools, one of them twice, on 3 continents in the space of 5 years.
Wow.
That's character building.
Yeah. So that's pretty intense. That gives you a good grounding of my background. And then the work that I do, so I actually studied accounts, economics, and computer programming in Scotland first when I left school, because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And my dad thought that that would be a really good idea for me. And in the process of doing it, having cheated half my way through like second so year and failing this and failing that and just pulling my finger out, getting through it, I discovered osteopathy. And when I did, that was it. That was like my corner was turned, right? And so I moved to Oxford to study osteopathy. And that was nearly 20 years ago now. And since then, so I trained in Pilates early on, but really early in my career, I had discovered Eric Cressy and followed. I was really into sport and I was really into the fitness stuff. And I was really jealous of all the guys who had come from like a Czech background onto the program and were like trainers. And I was like, man, I wish that was me. And they just had like that extra level about them. And so that was kind of what I was always chasing. And then I was referred, like occasionally Eric would send people who were in the UK that he was programming to me for a treatment in the UK, as well as other people. And then somebody that he was training said, oh, he's just started doing this PRI stuff. Do you know about this? And I was like, no. So we explored it. And then I did a PRI course in, did Mayo Kin in 2014. And then I did a PRI for Fit Pros in 2017. And then I also discovered counseling. I discovered the counseling before that. I'd started doing transactional analysis like way back in 2009 for various reasons, personal and professional. And I was really drawn to it. So transactional analysis is a style of counseling that I use. And that is based, the main model that that is based around is a parent, adult, child model. So all the shoulds in your life are your parent kind of voice, right? It's all that, all the, yeah. And then your child is where you make the decisions around how to belong and be loved and be okay with all of those parent voices. And your parent place could be your mom, your dad, it could be siblings, it could be your church, it could be your school, you know, it could be your sport even. Or sports coach. So that's the kind of the, you know, the cultural stuff. And there's a big element of the cultural parent as well. And that's a, like a whole other thing to itself in a way. So the parent, adult, child, and then your adult place is your here and now reality. It's being, you're able to consider the parent input and you're able to consider your child decisions, but you're also able to keep a really solid perspective of here and now without rubber banding back to a previous story. And in that place, I'm okay, you're okay. So okayness is a real, is a very transactional analysis TA term. So in addition to the PAC model, you will see the okay corral. So I'm okay, you're okay. I'm not okay, you're okay. Nobody's okay, and we're all okay.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. And it is. So it's really fascinating. The whole way that TA was built was on the premise that an eight-year-old should be able to understand it. And it was mostly done in group therapy settings initially. So it was a very social, it's a very socially based system, right? It's truly relational. So I love it. I really love it. And I think it's fantastically useful. And so I finally became fully qualified as a therapeutic and complementary counselor. So I do complementary means that I can use it alongside the osteopathy or alongside the training, and therapeutic is like, sit down and tell me about your childhood, right? So, so I'm both, and I qualified in that in 2020. And yeah, that's pretty much it. And then I did EP with Katie, which was fantastic because I've been dying for a conversation around all of this PRI stuff. And it was really hard to find in the UK, especially then. And so of course, Katie's that whole box was then just opened, and she's such a fantastic teacher. She's really inspiring. She's always looking for more, right? She's always looking for more connections and more ways to pull it together and expand her thinking and her way of being able to have the conversation. So yeah, that's brought me to here. And then I wrote the books through lockdown for a few different reasons.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into that.
Yeah, I was going to say, tell us a little bit more about your book, unless you want to talk about something else first, Alina.
I don't mind.
Well, yeah, you're an author. That's like a big deal too. Congrats on your books. I have them right here.
Yay.
And then I have the other one too. And we'll kind of, we'll dive into this a little bit. But let's actually talk about the counseling first and how you kind of use that with PRI. And then we'll go back to the books. Cause I'm super fascinated in that because PRI, like from studying it, there's a lot of psychological elements to it. Yeah. And if we ignore that psychology of the person, then you're not really looking at the person in front of you. Right. So I'm interested in like what you've learned in this type of counseling that you've studied and how that helps you specifically and what you're seeing in the clinic on a daily basis.
Okay. So I guess for me, the link was more from osteopathy to counseling and then building in the PRI.
Yeah.
Because it fits really well. It integrates extremely well. The kind of things that I will see day to day, in osteopathic terms, obviously there's back pain, you know, there's sports injuries. I work with a few high level athletes. I work with, you know, weekend warriors. I work with age, like my oldest patient right now is 92. He was really ill about a year ago. He lost loads of weight, but he loves sport, has always loved sport. His whole family is really active. And he wants to be stronger to get back on the tennis court. And so, you know, I've got him doing some breathing strategies and a little bit of like really light weights, you know, and just getting his shoulder range back in and you know, getting that scap and rib cage to meet and find some pump. And I guess the essence always for me comes back to meaning. How are you making meaning of this? And is that taking you in the direction that you want to go? And if it's not, then it's time to make a new meaning. And you have to understand what your story has been in the past and how you've gotten to this point to be able to do that and to be able to name some of that stuff that we would rather put away in a box and shove under the bed and, you know,
right,
busy ourselves away from.
It's really interesting.
Which is why then you, when you look at the breath, and so for me, the concept of allostasis, which I talk about in the books, and the interoceptive allostasis, that really was like a major shift in light bulb for me. And, you know, where allostasis is essentially when your prediction system, you're metabolizing, you're able to regulate your metabolic systems well, right? But good allostasis or allostasis, because otherwise you're in allostatic load and then you're in depletion, disease, and depression, right? If you're under allostatic load and you're not regulating well, and that can arise because of various things, and we know all the stressors, right? but allostasis basically comes from the interceptive system, which is is how we read our internal milieu, the neuroendocrine, the neurovascular functions, all of the neurovisceral stuff, all of that is read through our interoceptive system. And so that, and then it's predictive. So when we have good allostatic process going on, because allostasis is a process of reading that and predicting what we're going to need. But one of the key things that was being found in the last 5-10 years of the research is that this isn't just like biological. It's not just how, you know, we manage our blood pressure as we stand up, or, you know, we need to drink some water. It's also about our psychological processes, or, you know, the pain and the stress and the emotion part of prediction as well. And for me, that then really connects into story, right? That is the biological basis of our biography, of how we create our story, and then how we make meaning of that. How do we understand it and name it and make meaning of it and update it? Because we can update, and that's the important bit. And I think sometimes that is the piece that can be left out in conversations about behavioral change. You know, I absolutely get that if you move towards something and you take action and you get the dopamine response and it, you know, you manifest that ongoing change, and it, when you're consistent, then it carries on. And then we also know that, you know, good old Selle and the general adaptation syndrome and all of the cascade that comes down, then, you know, and then you look at trauma, and there's so much of that, and, you know, all the different aspects of that. You look at even postnatal depression, even towards, you know, connective tissue disorders, and, you know, even like say severe hypermobility syndrome, where there's, where you struggle to get that sense of safety in yourself, in your environment, right? Because you're always assessing where your feet are and where you are in space. It's not just a given, right? So for me, all of that blends into that same picture of prediction and how we feel okay in ourselves, and i.e. safe in the world. And then coming back to the PRI, that then bleeds into, okay, let's find the breath. You know, because that interoceptive, how we use interoception and neuromodulation, so the interventions of interoception kind of goes towards neuromodulation, right? And we use the breathing and the vagus nerve. And there's a lot of really exciting research coming out in parts of osteopathic stuff at the moment around interoceptive touch, which is like affective touch and uses C-tactile fibers. And that really, that links into your social and behavioral system. It's so connected. And I think we really underspeak that stuff. So
I think it's so amazing what you're doing, because I mean, our podcast is called Move Your Brain, Move Your Body, and they are like married. Right. And obviously, you know, you can, that's why I think people will see a lot of changes with PRIs, because you're kind of bringing them back to center. Right. But on the other hand, you know, your childhood trauma or the way that you're raised or the way that you see the world, that could, it's like chicken or the egg, right? You could, they could be easily affecting each other. It's not like one is causing the other, but if you don't address both, then you're probably not going to get to the root problem.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I think for me, you know, part of my personal story in that was like when I had my son, like absolutely that threw me as it throws so many women. And,
right.
You know, my experience or my story is not unique, but I think for me, I looked so functional, you know, but the things that I was experiencing, and when my son was about 2-3 years old, I started to get PTSD about stuff that had happened decades before, right? Mm-hmm. And it was just a trigger, but I looked completely okay. And I was going to training, but like the rest of my life was falling apart. And I was only going to training once a week. And I swear to God, I had no capacity to do any more than that. And I had a brilliant PT. He was incredibly caring. He saw fantastic potential in me. He really wanted me to do more. He was encouraging, you know, but he just couldn't understand why I couldn't just fucking work out my time and do it, you know, like, this is for you, like, take it for yourself, you know? And I was like, I have no more capacity emotionally or physically, but especially emotionally. And like that bit, I think is when people are very well functioning, it's very hard for anybody else to understand. And I think it's an important conversation to have, because we do want to expand the capacity of both the person and the professional in their brain, their body, and their heart. That's my vision, you know, that to really take health and fitness to enable something that holds space for all aspects of the person, and that both the client and the professional can leave in their fullest capacity.
Love that.
Yeah, I love it too.
Something that's really stood out to me this entire time is when you were talking about the parent and like the shoulds.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of my personal, like I should be getting perfect grades on my exams.
Right.
Literally what we were just talking about like 20 minutes ago. And I think on my part, like a lot of what I'm definitely a person pleaser, as in like, I like to make other people happy, but I also like to make myself happy. And I think a lot of the time it like wears me really thin, because I try to do everything for everyone. And I think one of like everybody's, our shoulds are like the things that we're thinking about what we should be doing rather than what we are doing, or what just feels like it fulfills us. It's hard to separate the two, and it's hard to really know what's going to make you okay. And I personally would rather be better than okay. But it's good to be, you know, just, reflecting on those things, I think, because you have to ask yourself like why it is that you can't just let these quote unquote shoulds go.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that was why I started the book with some of that TA theory around role identity, boundaries, contracts, you know, and how to navigate some of those conversations and how to start to get to know yourself in those terms and where your barriers are, you know, and like the bit on time structure. Time structure is such a great way for us sometimes to kind of throw a spanner in the works. You know, where we talk about you can be very withdrawn or you can just do a lot of pastiming and that social chit chat where you don't get into any depth, or you can go into what we call games and rackets, right? Where you're not really getting on with the activity at hand, but you're diverting away. And that's probably where a lot of sabotage will take place. Because the further towards intimacy you go, the more risk that there's involved. So a lot of training stuff will just be at the activity level, but people will often sabotage what's going on for them. And it's about understanding some of those processes. And, you know, like you're talking about, you want to do really well. Sometimes we might call that a be perfect, but you want to please people as well. And so that might be a please others, you know, and there's these different drivers. And so what I'm actually doing, and I will be releasing in about a month, is a course, a 10-week course for trainers on the back of the books to really dive into some of this material much more deeply, and to be able to use all of this stuff much more with their clients. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Great. So what we can do, also send me the link to that, and then we'll put it in this podcast for people that listen. Because like just even looking through your book and like reading pieces of it, like, first of all, the colors are like very pulling. So they like really attract somebody who's reading, and just the different things you have in here. It's a different type of book. It's not like you just read this book. There's a lot of interaction in this book. And I'm sure your course will be very interactive too, just because you can feel your personality through these books. Yeah, it's very interesting. And talking about like just, you know, comfort zone, coming out of the comfort zone, like you have a lot of things in here, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, things that I've read about before, but you're going into it in a different perspective. So
yeah, thank you.
Yeah. I actually wanted to read something I saw on your Instagram the other day.
Yeah.
It's a quote that you posted and it's kind of exactly what you were just talking all about.
Mm-hmm.
You wrote, regular varied movement, nutritious and varied diet, and being connected to ourselves, interoception, and others, intimacy, the vulnerability of which is possible through value-based boundaries, allows for greatest health and resilience. Now, this is something like me and Megan can 100% agree on. And anybody really who is a clinician or working, even with just anyone who works with other people, I think can understand this quote and see why this is so important. And it's kind of what you just talked about so far in this podcast.
Yes. Thank you. I do. And I'm absolutely passionate about this stuff. I really am. I especially on the back of COVID, I think that it's a real opportunity for us to expand the conversation and expand the way that we work with people, mm-hmm. you know, and for me, it's taking that biopsychosocial model, which to some degree is still ticking boxes.
Right.
And really making it relational.
Yeah.
You know, we're dealing with humans and we are humans. And the thing about the okay concept is I can be angry and okay. I can be sad and okay. I can be excited and okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and I can be annoyed with you and you are still okay and I'm okay too.
Right.
And it's all of that wrapped up. And so it's the okayness scale of shit to great. It's that real sense of equanimity.
Right. Yeah. That's a great word. Yeah. Mm. I like that word. Mm. Equanimity.
Yeah. Thank you. And it really speaks to the co-created nature of relationships, you know, like one of the quotes that I really love is from a guy who's done a lot of TA writing. is that we don't ever exist in isolation. We are social beings. And even in fantasy, we are either moving towards or away from someone.
Mm-hmm. This is very true. We're very social beings. And I mean, we could go into the whole COVID thing because we were just isolated for, like, especially some countries more than others, for, you know, a year and a half. And yeah, some little kids are really showing signs of distress, I think, from it. And it's something that we should just think about and know and think about it for future. But that's my biased opinion on that.
I think it will. I think we are yet to really see the social effects of it. You know, I think there'll be a fallout from this in various ways. And I think actually somebody who's written some brilliant stuff around it, about maintaining the awareness of how we name things and how we come together, was Priya Parker. She wrote a book called The Art of Gathering. I really like the way she attends to some of that social ambivalence and confrontation as we've come out of COVID and start to find a new way or the old way, or, you know, trying to figure out how to define where we are in relation to our environment and each other.
Yeah. Well, I think because we are inherently social beings, COVID, you know, it kind of made us go crazy in some ways, but also I feel like people compensated or just made do in really unique ways. So it has been like a giant social experiment, honestly.
Totally. Totally. Yeah.
I don't think we know the outcome just yet.
No.
So who are the people that are usually coming in to see you? I'm assuming you see a lot of different types of people, or I guess I should word the question. What's your favorite type of person to work with?
I love working with people who want to manifest change for their goals.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, being able to think a little bit, you know, and take on something more unusual, which PRI certainly here still is. And I had a 70-year-old woman who'd been really unwell, but again, she loves to be active. And she sent me a message. She was like, oh my God, I just feel so great. I helped my husband build a shed at the weekend.
It's awesome.
Yes, that's a total win, you know. I've got another patient who I did a little bit of osteopathy with, and then I did a bit of counseling with, and she had made some major changes in her life and has gone from being a hairdresser to studying art and has now done a master's, and she's using some of my work in her final project and has invited me to her final show, and it's just like, wow!
That's so awesome.
Such an honor, you know, and so wonderful to be able to have that impact and see people, you know, really manifest themselves in a way that brings them joy and pride.
Yeah. And you get to be a part of their story.
Yes. Really cool. Yes. It's a real privilege.
I think that's what we're all looking for, is just like to find purpose. And
yeah,
you know, we want to exist for a reason. And I think the work you're doing is so amazing, because you're also helping people pay it forward to the people that they interact with as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm super interested in the counseling aspect of it, because I feel like even just talking to my own clients, like, a lot of what we're saying to them can be taken, or needs to be taken. You have to be smart about how you word things. And when you have somebody here who's like actually studied this aspect, because I haven't studied this, but I think it's very important. And like the merging of that counseling mind that you have learned and studied, along with helping people with their movement, their breathing, their strength training, etc. Do you feel that learning that has helped? And what have you taken? What's massively the best thing that you've taken from it? Yeah.
Absolutely, massively. You know, like, I remember a few months ago, I had somebody, she'd come in with a problem. We'd looked at it osteopathically. We'd done the full assessment, including the PRI stuff. And then we were doing positional breathing exercises and reorientation stuff. And she just wanted to go, you know, she was like, don't stop me now. And yeah. I was like, you got to slow down, you know, like, you just like, let's just take it slowly. And I was like, okay, what's going to happen if you slow down? What's going to collapse? And that was it. And it was just a question, but it was a direct confrontation to what she fears, right?
Yeah.
Probably that she hadn't even realized that she feared. And, you know, or being able to hold space for grief or...
That's interesting.
Yeah. You know, how different things present. People get really frustrated and angry, and it's like, okay, you know, I can feel this. I'm going to name this. I'm totally okay with you being that way. Let's understand what's going on so that we can get to the next bit, you know, because this means something really significant to you. And I think that acknowledgement makes it just in itself creates a shift. And of course, I think the benefit for me personally is that I built the confidence to be able to do that. And I understand the role that I'm in at the time, and say something comes up with a patient on the couch and I think, okay, this is an emotionally significant thing. I'll take my hands off and I'll stand back and I'll go, okay, look, I'm picking some stuff up. What I feel that's part of the picture here is this stress or this situation or this emotion. And I'd like to name that so that you can reflect on it. And if you want to talk about it, that's completely fine. And if you just want to go home and work on that, that's completely fine too. But I am feeling that as a manifestation in your body. So it's helpful to name it, even if you don't do anything else together. And you know, that can also be quite a big relief, because I think we try not to. We try to hide an awful lot. We try to carry on and get on and, you know, manage stuff and be this person and that person and this role. And like, there's so much that when we stop, and this is one of the other things about like the difference between health professionals and fit pros, is that when you're in a therapeutic space, and especially if somebody's on the couch and you're doing some treatment, they've already moved into a vulnerable place to some degree. There's already a contract for you doing something that's going to affect their physical being, right? And you're kind of, it's not that you're in control. It's not that you're in a position of power, but there is that shift, right? There's a difference there. And certainly if you were of the mindset, you could put yourself in those positions, but you know, none of us would want to. But with Fit Pros, and this is one of the things that I named in the book, because we come together on kind of a social type of situation, but the Fit Pro is very much in their professional role and the client is in their personal role, but it's a very social kind of contract, right? Mm-hmm. And that the availability for change and interception on some of the stuff that's significantly going on is not the same as when you're in a therapeutic contract. So I always take my hands off if it's in osteopathy. I don't go in knowing. And what my other thing is contract for contact. And I think that works whether it's emotional or physical. So, you know, the way I'm going to touch you now, is that okay? Does that feel okay to you? Okay, we're going to do something else. But then also, that conversation around, you know, there's this stuff and I'm noticing this and I'd like to name that. We don't have to take it any further, but I think it would be helpful to the process to name that and giving them the opportunity. So the way in which you contact them emotionally and therapeutically in that way, I think is important to name and to give them the chance to manage their own boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. It's really interesting because you're just, a lot of people are doing similar stuff, but you're putting in words.
Right. Yeah. You know? So that's one of the things I really wanted for this, is to have a language and a framework to do this kind of stuff and to be able to integrate the things that, you know, that we kind of do all know, but we don't always have a way to put them together.
And to speak about it.
That's exactly. And I think like, and I love it. I've made this, you know, this wonderful for me package of skills and being able to bring them together. And like, that was why during COVID, I just, I just started writing, and I actually wrote the FitPro book first because I felt like fitness professionals don't have that, you know, that kind of framework that sometimes they need, and they're in such a great position, right?
It's huge.
Act in that way, like,
yeah.
And it can be so frustrating when you get clients so far and you know you could get them further, but you don't know how, you know, like
right.
With me, he was like, oh, I'm banging my head against a brick wall. I know you could do so much more. And I'm like, believe me, I'm doing all I can, you know? And it's just like, how do you enable that conversation and how do you maintain as much capacity in the person as possible without feeling diminished yourself, either in your role or in your morale? Or your own story, you know, because our client's story is going to trigger our story at times.
100%. 100%. How much of your own background growing up in so many different places do you think has influenced and just having an interesting childhood?
Yeah.
You could talk a little bit more about that. How much of that do you think has influenced where you're at now and why you wrote this or studied this? Not everybody wants to study psychology because it is ultimately it's psychology.
Yeah, it is. I guess so. The key thing for me was belonging. That's kind of always been the thing, right? Because it's not just that I moved around a lot. I moved from a country that no longer exists.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't exist anymore. Like not even just in name. It doesn't exist. And my siblings are much older than me. So I have a brother in Alberta. I have a sister in Vancouver. I have a brother in Brisbane. My dad is buried in Brisbane. My mom is in Scotland. Like just my mom moving to this country about 15 years ago, she was in the same time zone. I was like, oh my God, I can call you. And it is the same time there. I hadn't had that since I was.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all know how complicated time zones are. So
some people have a harder time with time zones.
I was like, yeah, don't worry about it. We got this.
I've decided I'm time zone dyslexic. I actually Googled it the other day if it's a thing. I'm so bad with time zones. Some of my clients, if they listen to this, they'll laugh. I just can't get it.
I love it. Yeah.
I'm so bad.
Like you, Monica, I've traveled a lot. I mean, Alina, you've traveled a lot too.
Me too, but I always lived on the East. I grew up Eastern.
I have lived in other places in the world that were like literally on the opposite side of the like time as me. So I think maybe that's why, or maybe it's just like people are good at different things. Not something you can be really good at, but Alina's terrible at it.
I'm terrible, but I think also like Eastern time zone in America is like the time zone, all the TV shows, all that stuff. I always grew up like that. So I never really had to think about it. Yeah, but I've been traveling since I'm little, but still, I don't know. I'm just not good at time zones. I got other strengths. So it's just, that's very interesting. Like your whole background is very interesting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it took me a long time to kind of, you know, find my own ground.
I believe it.
Yeah. And you know, when you talk about feet and breathing and being grounded, that's hard work. That's work right there. for sure. So I guess there is that. And, you know, my eldest brother has just turned 60 and he left home when I was 7 and I probably spent a total of 6 weeks in his company, you know? So yeah, it's a very fragmented way of you know being, and I am in the northern hemisphere and I really need sunshine. So I guess
we all do
a number of things. Yeah, exactly. And I guess that aspect of having to adapt, one of my strengths is adaptability. And I think it's probably, it comes more easily to me, like, you know, compared to my brother, when we were traveling so much, he was 14 when we started moving. I mean, brutal, right? Brutal. But I was naturally confident. I'd be like, oh, hi, I'm Monica. I'm new here. And it wouldn't really bother me. Mm-hmm. So I guess I've just had to kind of find a way to integrate, and rather than going out, being able to stay in with myself, you know, and then some of the other, like other traumas and integrating those back in, and then having my son and, you know, the various things that didn't work from that, and finding my way back and, you know, becoming a mom. It's just like holding up a mirror to all the boxes that you wanted to have closed, you know. It's,
yeah,
it's a thing. And finding a new identity and finding a new way to be in your body and express yourself. And yeah, so
it's such a shame that like most people don't even get to the point where they're like recognizing that that needs to happen, you know.
Yes,
they just kind of get lost.
Yes, which is themselves. Absolutely, which is exactly why for me that conversation about behavior change also has to come from your story and your feelings, and that we don't talk about that feeling aspect enough. And like, I 100% support that you do have to just keep putting one foot in front of the other to, at some point, you know, you have to make small decisions, yeah, to keep going towards a purpose and towards an expansion of yourself and a place of peace and joy. And you're not going to do that sitting on your ass, right? It's not going to happen. And there are lots of different ways to support yourself in getting there, because you need resources, you need energy, you know. And that bit that I put in the book about burnout, you know, that fantastic book by the two Negossi sisters, where the primary aspect of burnout is emotional exhaustion.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Makes sense. It makes sense.
Emotional exhaustion without talking about feelings.
Yeah.
You cannot do yourself out of emotional exhaustion.
Literally makes sense.
Yeah. So, exactly. So it's like, for me, that's a really big part, and that we don't talk about enough, and that I'm really glad to hold more of a conversation about.
It needs to be talked about, because I think people just work, have all these feelings, they bury them, and then just don't talk about it.
Yeah.
And then they wonder why they're burnt out, whether it's athletics, whether it's their job, whatever it is.
Absolutely.
There's always an emotional aspect. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's it. And we don't have to be overwhelmed by some of those big emotions. You know, we can find the volume control.
Yeah.
It's okay for us to manage in that moment. Tomorrow it might be different. It might be up or down. We might find another way to be with it. But we have to be with it every day. And being able to name that and find our volume control just gives us so much power and potential.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It all makes sense.
Thank you. Awesome. I know. I love it.
Yeah. Well, you're doing some amazing stuff. I'm going to hold the books up just to show. Mm-hmm. Wrong way. And then we can thank you so much for sending.
You're welcome. I'm so pleased.
I think, Megan, I got one for you. So when you're here, I'll give you one.
Thank you. I was just thinking I wanted to order them. So
yeah, they're really great. They're very colorful, which is like the biggest thing I like that immediately grabbed my attention, and very like interactive. So I think people that listen to this podcast will find this super interesting. I mean, just super colorful.
Yeah.
I love this. I think it's awesome.
Thank you. So yeah, I did it in a way, and a couple of other people have said that I really love that you can dip into it and like just read a couple of pages and open it anywhere, and you'll get something, and you can also sit down and, you know, read bits, and you can interact with it, and you can think about it, and, you know, it doesn't have to be a cover to cover type of scenario. So yeah, there's lots of different ways to
and read. Filled with references too, which is awesome, because if people want to read other books, like I know you talked a lot about James Clear in here, and I thought that was really cool. So we're going to definitely link these books onto this podcast, and just see, you know, hopefully our listeners will, you know, find it really interesting and check out your books, and I'm sure they can purchase them on your website, et cetera. You'll send me the links. And then if you're in the UK, that's where are you located?
I'm in Oxford, and then I also have a clinic that I work at in London once or twice. Yeah.
London's one of my favorite places. So next time I'm there, I will, I will come. And then we have one more question for you. We ask all of our guests. Megan, do you want to do the honors?
Oh, I would love to. Okay. Monica, what is something that you do every day or most days to move your brain, move your body, or both?
So I have a ritual. Every morning I get up and I make my cup of tea, and then I go and sit. I have a chair by the back door, and I sit and I look at the sky for a few minutes, so that my brain waves can like go through the sequence. Thank you, Huberman Lab. And then I meditate for about 20 minutes.
It's amazing.
And that attends to my physiology and my mindset and just really sets me up for the day.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
Just helps you kind of like welcome the day, and rather than like the day kind of running you over as you're trying to like catch up with
it.
So I love
that. Yeah.
It's amazing. Well, thank you so much. And we just enjoyed this. This was very different. So that's what I like the most out of it.
Thank you so much for having me and having this conversation. I'm really grateful. I loved it.
Yeah. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast. Join in every week as we release new episodes.
Subscribe or leave us a rating at Apple Podcasts. If you have questions or topics to cover, please email moveyourbb@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram @moveyourbb.